Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, January 21st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. It's always a good idea to get in some test runs before heading out on a major ski trip. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But right now, the Bears' future looks a little brighter as they finalize a deal with their new head coach, Ben Johnson, joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home is Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And Ben Johnson's previous experience with the Detroit Lions is probably a good jumping off point for what the Bears can be if they are as good as the Lions have been over the last couple of years. Because as we've seen, Mark, in Detroit, when the Lions are good, the entire metropolitan area gets a lift. And Chicago, above and beyond, is above all, is a Bears town. And what would that mean for the city if Ben Johnson turns the Bears into a consistent winner?
Oh, there's really no limit to this. You know, we're still talking about the 85 Bears. We're not, what, 40 years since then? And we still talk about Ditka, and we talk about the great players that we had then. So this, if he is successful, and you never know, I mean, it's always great. He's the hottest coach out there right now. A lot of teams want him, but you never really know. It's like a draft. You don't know for a few years generally. If he turns out to bring championships to Chicago, they'll erect statues to the guy, and he can be here forever. That having been said, there's a lot to be said to happen between now and then. I think the most important thing to take from this is that the most attractive head coaching candidate in the NFL chose the Chicago Bears. He chose this organization, this team, this city, this quarterback, where he was going to take his talents, and he had many options. So that is a very good sign.
If the Bears are good, if Johnson turns the Bears into maybe not a consistent championship contender, but a team that's in the postseason for a couple of years in a row, what does that mean for the NFL that a major market team like the Chicago Bears will be making consistent appearances in January, fingers crossed?
Well, Rob, what a great question. The NFL, when it had some down years in broadcasting, people said, oh, well, it was because of the, you know, the Colin Kaepernick thing, or it was just, it was because the big market club sucked. That was the reason, Rob. And so people stopped watching the games starting in the middle of the season. And so if Chicago becomes a top-flight team again, it is going to make a big difference in the ratings. It's going to elevate the NFL, just as we're seeing now with the Washington Commanders doing the same thing, really kicking it up in gear, and they're a big market also. And that is really helping the NFL. So if the Bears become a consistent championship caliber, playoff caliber team, the NFL will benefit. The fans, of course, here in Chicago will benefit. And really, if you think about it, the sports world benefits when you have big market clubs with great histories like the Bears doing well.
Mark Gannis, president and co-founder, Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, a way to prevent getting out over your skis on your next big trip to the mountains.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you're planning a big ski trip to places like Utah, Colorado, or Vermont, practice at a mountain here in the Midwest can make for a safer and more enjoyable experience. We welcome in Bob Olson, Hansen, the president of Viking Ski Shops with locations in Barrington and in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And a couple of years ago, Bob, the Hart family took the plunge into skiing. We decided to take up skiing as a family activity. And there is a lot you need to know before you even try to strap into one of those ski boots, Bob. So if you want to go, if you just envision having a Colorado ski vacation, ripping down the slopes at Breckenridge and then relaxing in a hot tub at the end of the day, it takes a long way to get from point A to point Breckenridge.
It sure does. I think, that's why we strongly recommend to people that they try and ski locally if they can, get to learn the basics of it here. And then, if you get a lesson out west, it's great. But for people that ski often, I think the key every year is to get your bindings tested on your skis. And maybe you need your edges aren't sharp. You need a tune-up and that stuff. And then try your boots out. It's very important. People's feet change over the summer. It's always a good idea to try the equipment out and check your clothing before you head out west also.
Now, you are the president of a store that sells ski supplies, so I would imagine you have a certain perspective on renting ski equipment versus buying ski equipment, because, I've rented skis like for the season from a ski store in the Chicago area, and yes, it is, there are certain cost advantages to it, but if you want to rent skis ahead of time, Bob, isn't it like you have to do it in August or September?
No, not normally. I mean, some places maybe run out soon. Like we do rent skis to beginners, and we do a fair amount of children's lease programs for the year. All of our rentals are more seasonal, but and we recommend that to people to rent first. You don't know if you're going to like the sport instead of investing. I think it's a good way to rent, and then when you purchase, if it's a fan, you can't always afford everything, so the number one thing to buy on your own would be the ski boots. That's the most important part of your outfit. And with boots, we really recommend you try and ski locally, because there's a lot of pressures put on boots, and you want to try and get, if there is going to be any bugs, get those out. And luckily now, there's been some indoor skiing slopes. There's one on Chicago Ski Studio on Western, and a new one opened up in Schaumburg where they have revolving decks and stuff. And those are a good way to try out your boots and, just get some lessons also. And then for little kids, the Shredder, it's a franchise opened up in Portage Park, and it's more for kids like 2 to 5. And it's working very well to get the little kids into the sport. It takes a 1 or 2 days of the ski area they can teach you, and over a couple visits there. So.
Now, if you want to go outside of the immediate Chicago area and then go to a for real ski run, what are some of the places maybe within an hour or two of Chicago that you recommend?
Well, I would say the two most popular would be Wilmont and Alpine Valley. They're just over the Wisconsin line. One's in not too far away, hour and 15 minutes. And Grand Geneva is another place that has some excellent lessons for kids. It's a little smaller, where Wilmont and Alpine for Midwest is a little larger. And just because there isn't snow in Chicago, they're making snow. This is going to be quite a year, with the weather. They're piling snow up all the time. So, if people can get up during the week, that's another plus. Even nights, it's not too busy, or not as busy as a weekend. So it's a great way to get your ski legs back.
And then from a cost-saving standpoint, saving some money here and there on your ski experience, what is your take on the Vail Resorts Network, the Epic Pass, that not only gets you into a place like Wilmont, for example, but to other resorts in Vermont and Colorado and around the world?
I think if you know, there's the Epic Pass with Vail Resorts, and Alteryx Group has the Icon Pass. If you're going to ski more than 5 days a year, you know, if you can get away more than that, skiing is one of the cheapest things to participate in, because you can ski the top ski areas in the United States and even some European and Japanese areas for a flat fee. In the fall, it's, you know, roughly $750 to $900. And you can ski all year on that. So if you're going to ski more than 5 days, just have to buy one of these passes. And there's other ones too, smaller ones like Mountain Collective and things, where you can ski to, you know, every bunch of resorts 2 days during the year. So there are four or five different passes that allow people to ski very reasonably through the year.
Bob Olson, the president of Viking Ski Shops, locations in Barrington and Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. Thank you for joining us today.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President Trump's executive order to roll back federal electric vehicle mandates will likely have a significant impact on Tesla and other U.S. automakers. Joining us to discuss this is John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv. in Detroit. John, thank you for joining us today. And I want to discuss the dollars and cents of this particular issue, because there are all sorts of other ways one could attack it and analyze this environmentally and things like that. But as far as the dollars and cents of EV investment and this rollback of EV rules via executive order are concerned, is it too late to put the toothpaste back in the tube? Because if you just drive down the street, you see lots of Teslas, you see other electric models of other vehicles. So clearly, there is a segment of the U.S. driving populace that drives an electric vehicle. So it seems like this era is here, whether people like it or not.
No, I would agree with that, Rob. You know, last year, 1.3 million Americans bought an electric vehicle. And that's with all the problems that you hear about. You know, the range may be not that great, the charging time, and not enough public chargers. So once those issues get addressed, probably more electric cars are going to be sold, but not as many as we just thought a little while ago. And that's because, as President Trump is talking about getting rid of subsidies for those vehicles and is going to stop spending money on building more public chargers, that's definitely going to have an impact on sales of electric cars.
Now, at the same time, there's the other issue, and that is American competitiveness with Chinese-made electric vehicles. And the Detroit 3 and other automakers have made significant investments in building out their EV infrastructure. What is this going to do as far as the efforts are concerned in not only staying competitive with China, but also building these factories to build electric cars in America?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, the automakers, if you just look at the American automakers, not even counting Tesla, they have invested tens of billions of dollars in being able to make electric vehicles. That's a sunk cost. That's in the ground right now. This is why the industry is very worried about what President Trump might do. And I say might because, you know, for example, at one point he said he was going to eliminate the $7,500 sales subsidy that you get for buying an electric car. Now he's saying his staff is looking at considering doing that. So that seems to be a bit of a back off from what he said before. Even so, the industry is extremely worried, and it goes beyond electric cars. All this talk of tariffs going on to cars made in Mexico and Canada. Remember, every single car company operating in the U.S. market, at least the traditional ones, they all build cars in Mexico for sale in the U.S. The Americans do it, the Japanese, the Koreans, the Europeans. And so a lot of interest right now in the automotive industry as to what President Trump is actually going to do. And I say actually because, you know, sometimes he says things and maybe doesn't do exactly that. So everyone's they're biting their nails right now, watching to see what he actually does.
John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, identifying alternate and less expensive destinations that have many of the features of the hotspots.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The sunny skies are providing only an illusion of a nice day. We'll get an update on the dangerous cold from AccuWeather. President Trump wielding some pink slips today. Travel Tuesday, exploring so-called destination dupes that provide more value than some well-known spots. And President Trump's declaration on drilling already impacting oil prices. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 465 points. The NASDAQ is up 142. And the S&P 500 is up 51. We have two below zero right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies. Another day that's just unfit for most outdoor activities. Let's get the latest on the brutally cold weather from AccuWeather meteorologist Carrie Schwindenhammer.
As we head through this early afternoon, we're looking at temperatures inching up very slowly. Right now, about two below at O'Hare, and across the region, most temperatures are still right around or below the 0 degree mark. About two right now in Kenosha, and certainly along the eastern shore of Lake Michigan, we're above zero right now. As we head through this afternoon, we're only struggling to get to five for a high and then back down to about zero for a low tonight. Now, the good news is that there will be a big jump in temperatures tomorrow, getting up to 25 degrees as southwesterly flow kicks in ahead of our next storm. There could be some flurries on the way as well, though. Back to you.
And we'll have the complete forecast coming up at 12:38. President Trump has fired four high-profile people as he sets up staff for his second term in office.
In a social media post, the president dismissed Chef Jose Andres, former Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley, and ex-Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottom from three councils, and former State Department official Brian Hook from a board. Milley's portrait in a Pentagon corridor featuring former Joint Chiefs Chairman was also removed. The general had received a pardon from President Biden yesterday over concerns the new administration might criminally target him. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
Hey, it's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Matt Shapiro, President MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And I have a feeling that a lot of investors and traders have something in common with Bears fans today. And that is they are both imagining what life could be like under the new boss.
Yeah, and, you know, but I do want to point out, however, that, you know, even those people who are super enthusiastic about, you know, the so-called Trump trade recognize that the market is still going to be volatile and, you know, there's going to be detours and pullbacks along the way. Remember, in January, we had a very steep correction with interest rates skyrocketing all the way up until really last week. Small cap stocks had a 10% correction. So, ironically, of course, now we have what is, I think, almost a terrifying rally, fear of missing out, everything rising all at once, especially fundamental stocks, of course, which many people believe will be one of the biggest beneficiaries of the policies of the new administration.
Now, what kicked this off? Was it just simply the possibility of reading the tea leaves, reading the executive orders, and thinking that maybe some of the tariffs that had been talked about during the transition are starting to tumble on the list of priorities for the new the Trump administration economic team?
Yeah, tariff talk sort of died out a little bit. I will point out, though, overnight, when Trump had that freewheeling Q&A in the Oval Office, futures were up, I don't know, maybe 250 points on the Dow. He mentioned, yeah, I'm going to do some tariffs, and they dropped about 1.5% in a matter of minutes, but then all the way back. So it was sort of dialed back. I would say, however, the rally really touched off on last week's inflation report, where of all things, we had a 0.01 change better than expectations, i.e. inflation had cooled a little bit better than people had thought. And that just really touched off the rally. Interest rates plummeted. And with the yield curve being so steep and then coming back down, fixed income investors, you know, had a great opportunity to lock in very high rates. That's continuing, and that just really turbocharged this market.
And it feels like we're starting to remember or getting our sea legs back and what the news dynamic was 2017 through 2021. And I would imagine the same thing is happening in the world of finance. I mean, are there banks or investment banks or financial firms that have a Trump whisperer or someone who's like someone on staff, an analyst who's kind of really good at reading between the lines of what the president has to say?
Well, being in the wealth management business, we certainly get lots of emails with people that purport to sort of know the thinkings of the administration and you know, the new occupant of the Oval Office. However, as you can see, even showing up at the inauguration, you know, the CEO of Apple doesn't guarantee results, with Apple down 4% today. So remember, stocks will still make moves on their own merits. Although for now, the market's going straight up, kind of revisiting the highs that we set with the first enthusiasm after the election.
Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, getting better bang for the buck by choosing a travel dupe.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
We've talked about the so-called travel dupes in the past, lesser-known destinations with the charm of popular hotspots, minus the crowds and the high costs. Joining us today with a fresh list for the new year is Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator of JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her online at JetSetJulietTravels, but you can find her on your radio right now. Juliet, thank you for joining us today.
Hello.
Now, the idea of travel dupes, this is, for lack of a better word, the store brand version of a premier destination.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, something that gives you the experience without dealing with the crowds or dealing with the expense of going to the place. Like, for example, today, Chicago, this could be a dupe for the North Pole.
Yeah. Well, guess what? I live down in Charleston, South Carolina, and we're about to get an inch and a half of snow. And I got to tell you, these people are freaking out. And I'm just sitting back here laughing. I'm like, you have no idea what you're... This is very strange. So... But yes, that sounds like it's very dupey. Maybe we're a dupe for Greenland. I don't know. But here's the thing. You want something that's comparable. You won't have all of, as you said earlier, the bang for your buck. But you also don't want to deal with the crowds. That's a huge problem. Everybody, for instance, this is number one on my list for kids and adults. You always have to talk about Disney when you're talking about kid travelers. Everybody needs to go to Disney at least once in their life, right? I mean, every kid, they want to go. The problem is that everybody does go to Disney at least once in their life, and they all go at the same time, which is why people have started to really yearn for an alternative, because the demand for Disney means it's always packed. It's outrageously expensive. And that's trickled over into Orlando as a whole, because even if you stay outside of the Disney Universal area, you're still paying a pretty high premium for hotels, and resorts, don't even think about it if you want to, you know, if you're on a budget. So my choice for a dupe for Orlando is Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Now, before you start laughing at Pigeon Forge, it's not a bad drive from Chicago. It's about 9 hours, 8 hours if you drive like me. So you're saving money right off the bat on flights. If you can fly there, of course, it's like an hour from the airport. But a lot of you probably don't even know what Pigeon Forge is all about. It's the home of Dollywood. And who doesn't love Dolly Parton? We all want to support her. But the thing is, the park actually itself gets really high marks from people who have gone to both Disney and Dollywood. Plus, that area is the Blue Ridge Mountains. So you're not just limited to an amusement park. There's outdoor stuff. There's sports. There's adventure. Everything you could dream of right there. Pigeon Forge has a kind of southern charm that helps make your stay a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more authentic than Orlando, which has kind of turned into one giant, you know, commercial. So that's number one on my list.
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as Pigeon Forge and Dollywood are concerned, my buddy Marcus Leshock, who is the resident coaster fanatic at Channel 9, he reviews roller coasters, and
yeah,
he's been to Dollywood at Pigeon Forge, and if you are a roller coaster person, that's a legit park. So, yeah, that's you're not alone in that assessment.
Yeah, I think it's definitely picking up steam. I think there is a real sort of sense of turning on Disney because of the high prices. So hopefully they'll remedy that. Who knows? But the next one on my list, and this is for outdoor lovers, there's actually two. I've combined two. I realize this is a little niche, but if you're looking for something a little different, a little unexpected, look no further than Utah and the Bonneville salt flats. The most famous salt flats, I'd say, are probably in Bolivia in South America, but, you know, that's a heck of a trip. So instead, fly out to Salt Lake City, which, by the way, if you haven't noticed, is having a major moment right now. Nobody was talking about Salt Lake City a few years ago. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the Bravo Housewives show. You've got one of these luxury real estate reality shows there. So it's starting to appeal. That whole area is starting to appeal a little bit more to the average traveler who might have avoided it in the past because of its link to the conservative Mormon church. You know, there's not the drinking was an issue for a lot of people, or lack thereof. So the
you know what, like, right, like there are just really too many Osmonds. That was the thing that was scaring people away. Far too many Osmonds.
We love the Osmonds. Yeah, we love them, but they're just a little too good. The Bonneville Salt Flats, they're an hour and a half drive from the airport in Salt Lake. And unlike Bolivia, you're not going to be, you're not going to have to acclimate. And it's just a really cool place to see. Plus, you've got Moab, Utah nearby. You've got Zion National Park. I mean, it's really, really beautiful. Bonneville Speedway for racing fans. And the other thing that I think is kind of interesting, if you are planning on going to the Grand Canyon, yes, it's epic, but maybe hold off. Maybe think about Antelope Canyon. Both are in Arizona. One is obviously a lot more touristy and famous than the other. Antelope Canyon is more intimate. Plus, this place is an Instagrammer's dream. You've got the light beams, the natural staircases, and far fewer people to contend with. So that's a good one. Let's head out to, like, for the beach lovers. San Diego, definitely a good place for a beach lover who likes, who likes a big variety. But I got to tell you, San Diego, it's a tourist destination and it's very, very busy. Instead, I say go to Santa Barbara. You've got the Sussexes living nearby in Montecito, so maybe you'll run into them. Santa Barbara just has this air of elegance to it. It's got the Spanish influence. You've got lots of five-star hotels and Michelin-star restaurants. So it's a little bit, it's less casual than San Diego. But it's more intimate, and that's what I love about it. And the last thing on my list is, this is for music fans. I'm a music freak. I went to Nashville a few years, actually 10 years ago at this point. Yes, it's a hot spot. It continues to have its moment, but the moment has been going on for a long time, and you know what happens when there's a moment. Prices go up, more people go. I say go to Memphis. It's the birthplace of rock. It's the birthplace of the blues. You've got Beale Street. You're not dealing with as many bachelor and bachelorette parties. That has really become an issue in Nashville. If you've been to Nashville recently, it's just constantly like, it's just a bunch of drunk people out on the main road there. So immerse yourself in some history at the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, and then skip on down to Beale Street, have some barbecue, and you've got more varied music options. And it's a great place if you're not a country fan like me.
Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator of JetSetJulietTravels.com. Back to the Osmond, she's more rock and roll. She's not country at all. Find her online at JetSetJulietTravels. Thank you for joining us today. Join us this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, the new administration's impact on oil prices.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President Trump's drill, baby, drill declaration immediately impacting oil prices. Joining us to explain is Phil Flynn, senior market analyst with the Price Group in Chicago. Phil, thank you for joining us today. It's an executive order, but it's also a messaging executive order from the White House. And what message is that sending?
The message is that we're going to be producing a lot of oil here, my friend, in the next couple of years. And we're already seeing the market react. You know, we have a situation where supplies are tight, demand's been strong at a record high, we have cold temperatures. But this signal to the market that there's a new day dawning is driving prices down. Now, there is some talk that Trump's delay on putting tariffs on Canada and Mexico, you know, till February 2nd is also easing some concerns. But make no mistake about it, there's a new day that has dawned in the U.S. energy space and the markets are reacting.
Now, is there an upper limit, though, or a lower limit, I should say, to how much production makes economic sense for a petroleum company?
it is going to be a situation where we have to be careful, right? If producers just start raising production and they crash prices, you know, they start to lose money, and that's no good for anybody. So there's going to be some balances. You know, I don't think prices are going to go straight down. We have significant challenges, right? We have record demand. You know, we have the potential of new sanctions on Russia, new sanctions on Iran and Venezuela. So it's going to be a rocky road, right? But the good news is that at least we have a vision for the future, and that vision is to be the number one oil and gas producer in the world, and that's going to serve us well.
And then there are some key differences, though, just as far as driving and consumption patterns are concerned compared to where we left off in 2021. I mean, far more EVs out on the road, more people working 3 or 4 days a week, and that kind of clamps down on just the day-to-day need for gas.
It does, but amazingly enough, demand is still going up, not as fast as it normally would be, but we're seeing gasoline demand go up. And another thing that could turn out to be historic is reversal of the EV mandate, right? President Biden wanted half of the cars sold in the United States to be electric by the year 2030. That's been thrown out the window. Number one, it was never doable in the first place because nobody wanted the cars. And number two, it's taken a huge burden off of the U.S. Auto industry, which is going to allow them to compete globally and not with artificial mandates from the government.
Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst with the Price Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.